the divine souls. I've been explaining the Maharas Leela as it's described in Ras Panchadhyayi of the Bhagavatam. There are 5 chapters in this description, and so far we covered the first 4 chapters, which is mostly a build-up leading up to the actual performance of Maharas Leela. In the first chapter of Ras Panchadhyayi, Shri Krishna prayed to Radharani, his Yogamaya Shakti. He surrendered to her, and when she appeared, he requested her permission to do Maharas. Once she granted her permission, since she is Raseshwari, she is the supreme controller of all the divine leelas, especially the Ras Leela. So with her grace, Shri Krishna played on the flute and announced to the whole Brahmand that Maharas was going to start. The sound of that flute was divine. That's how it traveled everywhere, and that's why it was only heard by those who are qualified to take part in Maharas. Of all the different types of devotees of God, or I should say of all the different types of saints, only the Samartharati Madhuri Bhav Gopi saints are given entrance to Maharas Leela. So the gopis came running. As soon as Shri Krishna played on his flute, the gopis' heart, each gopi's heart was just taken. Now Shri Krishna had all the minds and hearts of the gopis. So the bodies of the gopis followed. Each one of them was now in a state of prem samadhi. Whereas jnanis and yogis basically only have 2 types of samadhi. Samadhi where there are some visions, and nirvikalp samadhi where there's no thought, no experience. The Nirvikalp Samadhi is said to be higher than the Savikalp Samadhi. And after God realization, a jnani enters into a state of Brahmaleen Samadhi, a state of total oneness where the jnani knows nothing, sees nothing, and experiences nothing but Brahm everywhere. He feels himself to be Brahm and sees nothing but Brahm everywhere. One type of samadhi. But in prem, in the divine love leelas, there are actually many, many types of samadhi. Samadhi means a state of total absorbment in the divine bliss. So we have jagrit state, when someone is conscious. You have swapna state, when someone is seeing visions, dreaming, you could say. You have sushupti state, when someone is completely unconscious with no activity at all. And then you have turiya state, which is like being in a totally unconscious state and yet dreaming, or being conscious within your unconsciousness. That's turiya. According to this, we have 16 main types of prem samadhi. So the gopis, Radha Krishna, these divine personalities, they can enter into 16 different types of samadhi. So whereas the jnani would just be lying there in samadhi like a log, a jnani in Brahmaleen samadhi, a devotee of Radha Krishna could be in jagrit samadhi, totally conscious and yet in samadhi. Then you have Jagrit Me Swapna Samadhi. Then you have Jagrit Me Sushupti Samadhi. And you have Jagrit Me Turiya Samadhi. Then you have Swapna Me Jagrit, Swapna Me Swapna, Swapna Me Sushupti, Swapna Me Turiya. Then you have Sushupti Me Jagrit. See, how can you be both totally in a Sushupti state and Jagrit at the same time? We can't understand. Sushupti Me Jagrit, Sushupti Me Swapna, Sushupti Me Sushupti, or Sushupti Me Turiya. Turiya Me Jagrit, Turiya Me Swapna, Turiya Me Sushupti, Turiya Me Turiya. 16 main types. This is just mote taur par. There are even other subtleties within each of those 16. So the gopis, when they heard the sound of Shri Krishna's flute and he stole their hearts through the magic of that flute, each gopi was in their own type of samadhi according to their divine status. One of those 16 or some variation within. So all of the gopis in their own way left and ran to meet Shri Krishna. When they met him, there was some discussion on what dharma is. And then Shri Krishna and the gopis enjoyed that Sharad Purnima night. Enjoy doesn't mean enjoy like how we breathe the fresh air and admire the moonlight. In such a leela, everything is bliss. Everything is the work of Yogamaya, the fragrance of the flowers, the feeling of the breeze, the grass or sand under their feet, the light of the moon. All of it is just Shri Krishna's grace and the work of Yogamaya. So all of that works to heighten the bliss of not only gopis, but even of Radha and Krishna. So Shri Krishna associated with the gopis in a very playful, loving way, and then vanished, giving them his viraha. The gopis sought to find Shri Krishna in the jungle, and when they found that they were entering into such deep jungle that it was too dark, even the moonlight wasn't filtering through, they decided to go back to the bank of Yamuna. And there, along with Radharani, they cried out for Shri Krishna in what is called Gopi Geet, expressing their humbleness, selflessness, love, and total surrender for Shri Krishna. When any soul submits themselves to Shri Krishna in that way, he can't stay away for even half a second. Every tear a soul cries to meet Shri Krishna cries a tear to meet that soul. Think of how gracious he is, how kind. And it's not like a mathematical equation for him, like, oh, this soul cried a tear, I must also cry a tear. His heart really melts for that soul when the soul sincerely yearns for him. So imagine he is desiring to meet you. Whatever sincere longing you have in your heart to meet him, he feels the exact same thing for you. So he couldn't stay away, and he appeared in the midst of the gopis. After that, there was some more. They went down to the bank of Yamuna. Gopis again got to talk and be with Shri Krishna, enjoy his association. All of this is the lead up to Maharas. They had some more discussion, inquiring from him about his nature of disappearing and giving viraha, and why does he do that? And Shri Krishna explained that by giving viraha, he makes a person's devotion paripakva. He elevates their devotion, and through the intensity of their longing, all of their sins, karmas, sanskars, everything is burnt, and they attain to the highest state where they become qualified for maharas. So once Shri Krishna had explained this, this meant that he was now prepared to do maharas. So there, next to Yamuna River, with the full moon shining down, the whole atmosphere pervaded by the divine fragrance of many, many different types of flowers that have very deep, subtle perfumes. The best we have in this world, like gardenias and roses and jasmine, just imagine even better than that, and many, many varieties, all blooming at night. So there in the center are Radha and Krishna. You've all seen the paintings. And keep in mind that my description is a mere... they're mere words. We have to visualize it for ourselves with faith, believing that Radha Krishna did this Maharas Leela. And even if the words fail to describe it, with a faithful heart, we can conceive somewhat what happened. And with Shri Krishna's grace, we can taste a little bit of that bliss of Maharas, just through our faith in him. So listening is just like the doorway to open that up. It gives us a basis through which we can form our visualization. Through that we can remember this Maharas Leela. So Radha Krishna are in the middle, and they're surrounded by thousands and thousands of gopis, uncountable gopis. Shri Krishna now manifested himself between each set of gopis. So initially the gopis were standing in concentric rings with Mahasakhis, the eight Mahasakhis closest to Radha Krishna, and then bigger and bigger concentric rings. And they were standing with their arms locked like that. Then Shri Krishna appeared between each set of gopis. So there was one Shri Krishna for each gopi. It looked like each gopi, because all the gopis, you could say, had complexions like Radharani, golden, fair. And Shri Krishna's complexion is very dark, bluish, deep. So it looked like many golden jewels spread out in concentric rings, and in their midst, sapphires glowing. Above them, there was a great excitement. All the devis and devtas came in their viman, in their celestial chariots that can go through the air, and they are all hovering above and watching down. And the dundhubi, the celestial horns that sound on auspicious occasions, they just automatically started sounding. And flowers started showering down from Swarg onto the whole area where Maharas was going to start. The Gandharvas were singing Shri Radha Krishna's praises. So in this type of atmosphere, now they all started dancing. Dancing and singing. So everyone is automatically expert. Radha Krishna, when it comes to singing and dancing, the classical singing and the classical dancing that we know now, from where does that originate? It originates from our Vedas and Shastras. And where does that come from? Bhagwan. So the origin of beautiful classical dance and Sangeet is none other than Radha Krishna. So since they're the original masters, anyone who touches them, in other words, anyone who attains them, also becomes equally expert in these skills with no prior practice. So when you become God-realized, if you worship Radha Krishna with Madhurya Bhav, and you enter the divine world, you get to enter into Vrindavan, there won't be any training period for you. Like, first you have a 1 month class in classical Sangeet, and then after that you get some training in proper dance techniques. You won't need any of that. You'll be expert. Even if you're club-footed and clumsy and tone-deaf in this life and no rhythm, when you get over there, you'll be just like all the other gopis and you'll be ready to dance with Radha and Krishna and sing along with them. So the gopis started dancing with Shri Krishna, and each gopi only saw Shri Krishna with her. None of the gopis realized Shri Krishna is with each and every gopi. Each gopi just saw, out of everybody, he's dancing with me. So it was just her and Krishna. Now the gopis sometimes moved their feet forward, backwards, very fast according to the music, or slow and soft according if the music slowed down, according to the mood. They would twirl expertly, raise their hands up. As they did that, their chotis would swing around. Their kundal on their ears, because they wear big long ear pendants, those would also move. And of course, they were all expert at expressing the bhav of the dance through movement of the head, through the way they look at Krishna, the way they smile, the way the eyes move. Those of you who have studied dance, you know that's all part of the dance. So all of this is described, that gopis are using all of these skills to express the bhav of the dance. And of course, Shri Krishna is dancing along with them. They're bending at the waist and the neck. And it's creating such a dhun, because all the gopis are wearing multiple bangles. Kinkini, which also jingles. Nupur, which jingle. So imagine thousands and thousands, you could say millions and millions, unlimited gopis all moving in unison to the same music and moving their bangles and waist and feet all at the same time. It created a huge sound that spread everywhere. This beautiful sound of the jingling of all of their ornaments. It's said that what it looked like was like there is a big, huge cloud, because Shri Krishna is the color of a cloud. And in the midst of that cloud, there was lightning flashing everywhere because the gopis were dancing. Now, Shri Krishna also would take taan, like he would sing. And then the gopi who was with him, meaning every gopi, they would also sing. Either they would sing along with him, like just singing in unison with him, or they would take alap, like on as he's singing the basic tune, they would do something fancy and go up high, and Krishna would go, wah, 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 wah. He would praise them for their grace and expert in both dancing and singing. Sometimes the gopi would just sing in harmony with Krishna. So this was going on and on. As I said, Maharas Leela lasted for not millions of years, several billion years. A whole night of Brahma. So as this is going on, gopis are dancing so enthusiastically with Shri Krishna, like sometimes they're doing something independently and sometimes like a duet, and they're so close together but moving exactly in unison with each other. Just a mesmerizing scene. So from above, those devis and devtas, they're just almost falling unconscious. Even though they themselves are not able to participate in Maharas, just by seeing it, the maidens watching from the sky, their choti is getting loose. The flowers are falling out of it. Their eyes are drooping. They're not even conscious of their clothes, like how is it properly on their shoulder. Same thing with gopis. Gopis are dancing so much, now their braids are becoming loose. The flowers are coming out a little bit. Their sari is starting to get a little rumpled or loose here and there because they're dancing so much. And they're getting beads of sweat on their face. So they kept dancing and dancing, but sometimes when a gopi would get tired, she might stand, and if Shri Krishna is standing with his arms by his side, she might lock her arm around it and kind of lean on him like that, or he would put his arm around her. And Shri Krishna, although his body has a natural divine fragrance, he was wearing a chandan paste, so the gopi would, when Shri Krishna had his arm like that, she would also take in the fragrance of that chandan paste that he was wearing. And in the end, Shri Krishna took his own pitambar and wiped the faces of the gopis where they had started sweating. So this is the Maharas, this is the extent of the Maharas description, but it's more than enough for us to do Roop Dhyan. After this, Shri Krishna took all the gopis into Yamuna River. They did Jal Vihar. So although the singing and dancing part was over, the Maharas Leela is not over. This is also part of Maharas Leela. Shri Krishna and all the gopis just playfully, although they were tired, kind of worn out, but they went in Yamuna River to refresh and enjoy. So they went in and they started to cool off and they were enjoying it, but then the gopis started, they were also singing. After this, once Maharas ended, gopis were just singing. Like how we sing bhajans, I guess. But they were singing Shri Krishna's about his leelas and guna and just singing his praises. And then once they were in the water, the gopis started looking at Shri Krishna a little playfully and watching him and then splashing him. So then the water fight started between Krishna and the gopis and Radharani. So that went on for quite some time as well. A beautiful, playful scene there in Yamuna River, which you can also use for your Roop Dhyan. Just imagine any kind of scene you want where you get to go swimming with Shri Krishna, wading out into the shallow, sandy Yamuna and playing around with him, splashing around with him. After that, they came out of the water. And they weren't done yet. Then they went roaming in the forests near the edge. Like if Yamuna is here and then the big sandy area is here, then this area, the Upavan, just near the edge of Yamuna, there were some beautiful, what you could say, wood gardens or flowering, forested kunj areas. So they just went walking because the moon was still up. The moon, by the way, when all those, everyone in Swarg was amazed and watching from above, the moon also lost his way. Yeah, he got off his path across the sky and basically just stood there and was watching. So the moon was still shining down, the breeze was still refreshing and perfumed, And in that beautiful divine environment, they roamed around in the kunjas, just enjoying walking around. And after that, even though the gopis didn't want to, Shri Krishna told them, now it's time for you to go home. And since the gopis only lived to please Shri Krishna, none of them argued or said anything. They all went back home. So Shukdevji says to Parikshit that Parikshit, keep in mind that Shri Krishna is without worldly desire. Whatever he thinks happens, he is Satya Sankalp. All the whole world is under his control. He doesn't need anything from anyone. But he just does these leelas to give the bliss to the qualified saints and also to provide devotional material to reveal those leelas so that ordinary souls can hear them, remember them, and use them to do devotion. So here at this point, Parikshit asks a question, basically the same question he asked at the beginning of Maharas, and you remember what a scolding he got then. So he says, dharma sansthapanarthaya, Guruji, ek prashna hai. Shri Krishna takes avatar for the express reason of establishing dharma and removing adharma. He is the one who reveals what dharma is. He is the one who preaches dharma. He is the one who protects dharma. Then why is he doing actions which appear to be against dharma? As I explained, from a completely material perspective, if you had no other context and you just saw all the gopis going out in the middle of the night, leaving their families and meeting Shri Krishna, obviously that's not the correct context to take it in. But if someone just looked at it that way, then they would say, oh, that's adharma. That's unethical, immoral. Against the teachings of the scriptures. So Parikshit says, although I know Shri Krishna has no desire of his own, Guruji, I know that he's beyond worldly desires, but still, why did he do that? Our Jagat Guru Shri Kripaluji Maharaj always cautions us that ye kyon, 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 that question why, that has no place in the field of divine leelas. If you're not ready to set that question aside, then you're not ready to listen to any divine leela of Radha Krishna. But Parikshit, in seva to us, knowing the fallen state of our material intellect and that we're likely to make the mistake of questioning in that way, he questioned. He wanted to know, what is the point, what is his intention, what is he trying to accomplish by doing these actions which appear to be against dharma? So Shukadevji again explained, think of how patient he's being. Dharma vyatikramo drishta ishvaranancha sahasam. Tejiyasam na doshaya vahne sarvabhujo yatha. He says, yes, Parikshit, sometimes Ishwar Log. So Ishwar Log means Ishwar, Shri Krishna, or those who have attained him, saints also. Sometimes dharma vyatik kramaha drishta. It appears to your vision that they're doing something against dharma. It seems like it. But do you know what effect it has on them, Parikshit? Tejiyasam na doshaya. They get no effect of that. If we do something wrong, it is wrong. Because we have that mansha in our mind. We have that motivation, knowing full well it's wrong, but desiring to enjoy something or desiring to get revenge or for whatever our worldly emotion is that motivates us to do that adharmic thing. God is completely beyond dharma and adharma. So he's untouched by the effects of those actions. That's the first thing. He's not yet answering Parikshit's question about why he does it, but first thing is understand he's untouched by any kind of action he does. And he gives an analogy. Vahne sarva bhujo yatha. Just like fire eats everything that it comes into contact with. It doesn't matter what it is. It may be pure, it may be impure. If it goes in the fire, it becomes fire. But the fire itself is not affected by the quality of the thing that comes in contact with it. Similarly, Ishwar could do something that looks like dharma, could do something that looks like adharma, and yet gets no effect from either one. Yat pada pankaja paraganisheva tripta yoga prabhava vidhuta khila karma bandha svairam charanti munayo pinanahyamanas tasyechaya. Shri Krishna says, Shukadev ji says, Parikshit, Shri Krishna is the one that if you know him, you know everything. If you reach him, if you touch him, all of your past karma is finished. Your karma bandhan is broken forever. You achieve a state of desirelessness because you're fully satisfied by the divine bliss you get. And you wander wherever you want to go in that state because you don't need anything from anyone. That is the state of the one who has reached Shri Krishna. Now what about Shri Krishna? He's obviously beyond desire, beyond the effects of good and bad karma. Good and bad karma only affect a soul when their mind is attached to that karma. Shri Krishna has no attachment in anyone or anything. He comes on this earth, manifests his physical form here on the earth, and performs all of these lilas to grace others. Mukhyam tasya hi karunyam, Shandilya Maharshi says. Anything that God does is only out of his compassion on the souls. So, Parikshit, you want to know why he's doing what he does? There's always only one answer. The answer is always the same. He's doing it to grace somebody. He has no desire of his own. But he goes on to caution. Naitat samachare jatu. Manasapi hyanishvara. Vinashyatyacharan maudhyad yatharudrobdhijam visham. Parikshit, but someone who is anishwar, someone who is not at that level, should never try to imitate those actions of Shri Krishna or the saints. He gives another example to illustrate the point. He tells that Rudra, Bhagwan Shiv, he drank the halahal vish that came out of the Samudra Manthan. Would you imitate that action of Bhagwan Shiv? That poison, the fumes from that poison were killing everything on the entire planet. And he just took it and kept it in his throat. So, just like you wouldn't try to imitate that action, you shouldn't try to imitate the actions of God and saints that appear to us to be adharmic. Then how do we know what actions of theirs we can imitate and which we can't? He says it's easy. Ishvaranam vachah satyam. Ishvaranam vachah satyam tathaivan charitam kvachit. Tesham yat svavacho yuktam buddhimans tatsamacharet. The wise person emulates those actions of God and saints which match with how they've told us to behave according to our individual status. Each one of us has our own status according to our devotional progress, and God and saints have, through their examples and through their teachings, given instructions for people depending what status they are at in their spiritual progress. So we should follow those instructions that apply to us according to what God and saints have said. So we can only imitate those actions of theirs which match with what they've said we should do. Simple. The other actions they're doing are for others who are at different levels than we are. When we get to the level of the gopis, then we can imitate Shri Krishna's actions. Then we'll also become Ishwar. Right now we're Anishwar. So this is how Shukadevji explains to Parikshit. And he again wraps it up by saying that whatever Shri Krishna has done, this whole Maharas Leela is produced for the good of the souls so that they can know about Maharas Leela, they can meditate on it, use it for their Roop Dhyan, and thereby attain Shri Krishna. And the last thing he tells is that by meditating on this Maharas Leela, all of your worldly desires and attachments are burnt up. This is the power of this Maharas Leela. And after that, he concluded his description of Maharas. So this is where I will also end this telling of the Shri Krishna's Leelas of the Bhagavatam, and we'll continue from this spot more from Shri Krishna's life, because he was only 8 years old when he did Maharas. So I will return a few weeks from now and we'll continue with this Bhagavat Katha. Bolo Radha Krishna Bhagavan ki jai.